helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing the things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Call 340-1045. That's 340-1045. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show. It is 7:08 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. To our friends, to our fans, to our families, who welcome back to the show. We have missed you. To those of you new to the show, here's who we are and what we do. Each and every Saturday, right here on News 104.5 WOKV, I'm joined by the big guy, Sasquatch, the Yeti, 6'6", 232 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal, Mr. Larry O'Neill. You know Larry from his duties on TV as the host of Larry's Garden. You've seen him about town landscaping. He's the tall, tall man in the small straw hat. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspections, certified master inspector from Home Pro Inspections. You've seen me on HGTV as the house detective and possibly about town if you spend time in attics and crawl spaces. Larry's job here on the show is to be sure your grass is green, your fruit is sweet, and your flowers forever in bloom. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, my job is to be sure your home is safe, secure, efficient, and forever a source of pleasure and pride. From time to time, Larry gets a house idea, I get a garden idea, we mix it up in the middle. But what makes the show fun for us is you, your thoughts, your calls, your commentary. 340-1045, 340-1045. And if you're calling from Palm Coast.
Palm Coast, that's 904 right there.
No, they split to 386.
No, no kidding.
Yeah, it depends where you lived and whatnot. Okay. All right, no matter where you're calling from, Palm Coast, Lake City, Gainesville, and all the glorious surrounds of Jacksonville, tuck in the area code 904-340-1045. Sasquatch, the Triple Crown, three things, the trilogy on my mind.
The trilogy.
Yes, sir. Might I share?
Okay, please share.
Attic animals.
Attic animals, okay.
Flood certification and balcony inspections.
Balcony inspections. You don't want to make sure that thing stays solid when you're standing on it. Right?
We'll get there. Attic animals.
Okay.
Stuff what be in your attic or your crawl space that is alive is not good. We don't want dead stuff there either. But you know,
using the bathroom there, you know.
You shouldn't. They do. Animals do. That's one of the problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Dead animals smell bad.
Yeah.
Dead animals don't get into your attic.
That's an astute observation.
Get into your attic and become dead.
Yes.
When they become dead, they get really stanky.
Yep.
Before they become dead, they are defecating and urinating on your drywall and insulation and all that other stuff. It's really nasty.
And birds would get in there into any eaves openings.
Are
actually dangerous.
For our purpose, birds fit into the category of animals.
Right, right. And they're dangerous. And they're dangerous because their dung creates this particular type of disease.
Depending on the critter, it's not good.
Right.
So what do you do about this? The easiest thing to do is prevent them from getting there in the first place by assuring that all the little cracks and crannies and vents and screens and other things are properly covered.
Right.
And the stronger the screen, the better off you are.
Right.
You know, there's a tendency to get a super fine mesh, and many times builders or other people
are using hardware wire.
Right. They're using a nylon. Much like you would at a screen door.
That has life expectancy,
too. And the critters go right through them. So we want a good, strong wire. If need be, if you want a really fine mesh, back it up with a good, strong wire. Mm-hmm. And then in the areas that aren't really wireable, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, wireable.
Things that work well are bronze wool, steel wool, and foam.
Yeah.
Sometimes you make a little thing in there.
Hey, you could put the steel wool in first and then foam it over.
Yeah.
And that would be perfect because then when they start gnawing on it, then you got airtight seal.
Exactly right. Exactly right. It's not as much we're worried about airtight. We do want to keep water out of there.
We're
looking to keep the bugs and the other critters out.
Sure.
These processes will also help your attic to be a little bit cleaner, and that'll be nice. So if the weather is perfect for this type of work right now, where it's warm enough out that you're comfortable in the attic, right. And it's cool enough out that you don't sweat or you can really get up there. People say, what is the easiest way to find the areas of access in my attic? Here's the easiest way. Go up into the attic take your flashlight with you. Don't use your flashlight. Mm-hmm. Just move a little bit, turn off your light, and look around. And what you're looking for is light.
Right.
When you see a light spot, that's telling you, bam, I gotta get that. So you do it in darkness, fix it in light, and keep the animals out of your attic.
It's a funny thing. It's the smallest hole they can get through. You would not think that they could get through there, but they can.
Yeah.
They can. I had a small hole where squirrels were getting in there. And I didn't even notice. I had the screens change and everything because there was a squirrel getting up there. But it was a little small hole.
You're exactly right. And one of the reasons we end up with dead animals up in the attic is they get in small and they grow. And if they grow, they can't get back out. So that makes for a bit of a problem. Second thing on my mind, flood certifications, or more specifically, no flood certifications. In many, many, many neighborhoods around our area, houses flooded from Matthew last year, and that's tragic. We're in a scenario now where it's 6 months later. Sometimes these houses are on sale or for sale, and the buyer's concerned, did this house flood? Well, that's causing aggravation for sellers whose home didn't flood, and it's causing aggravation for buyers who are fearful about whether it flooded or not. So how can you sort that? On the seller's side, there's two things that you can do. One is a no-flood certification, and what that involves is a human coming out and going through a protocol to affirm that there's no indication that water has entered into the house, groundwater. Fairly simple to do. We do that all the time. The second thing to blend in with that is called CLUE reporting, Casualty Loss Underwriters Exchange. And what that is, it's essentially, how the credit report Experian gathers data? Well, Experian also gathers data on insurance claims. And the seller of a home, more specifically the owner of a home or building, can request from Experian the CLUE reporting that would document any insurance queries or any insurance claims. So if you have a nervous buyer or you're in a neighborhood where a lot of other homes may have been flooded and yours didn't, or even if it did and you want to demonstrate what the insurance position is, you can take care of those that whole issue with a no-flood certification and or CLUE reporting. I'd suggest you ask your real estate agent about those. It is very common that they are unaware. So if you're a real estate agent and you're shaking your head now going, what in the world is Wally talking about now? Give me a ring at the office and I'll sort that right through. Mm-hmm. Next thing is balcony inspections. Mm-hmm. Little known fact.
Balconies are nice.
I love balconies. Ago,
but nice.
In the state of Florida, if you have a building, be it a residence or an apartment building or any commercial building, a building that's more than three stories tall, that has outside balconies or stairways, they are required by the state to be inspected every 3 years. Not the state inspects them, but they're required to have a balcony inspection. Yeah. The state actually has a form specific for that you provide to your insurer.
Just walk out there, stand on it. It looks good.
Well, frankly, most people do that. The problem with that is if they haven't filled out the form, they haven't documented the inspection.
Right.
And if they've done it as an amateur, they are certifying it as safe themselves, and it's impossible to escape the liability should there be an accident.
Right.
So what the Balcony Inspection Certification Program does, it makes it so that it's a state form, so it's very consistent. Not to say it's great, rather it's consistent. Third parties, folks like us, do those. And it's objective and certified to be safe. That's then submitted to the insurer, in some cases mandatory for insurance, in other cases a reduction in insurance. And to be true, you can do it yourself.
You can?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
The problem is
you're liable.
You never escape the liability.
Right.
Because
you're liable.
Exactly correct.
Well, you're liable for it.
No matter what, you have less liability.
Yeah.
Right, when you have somebody else look at it.
Yeah, well, there's two things. One, by having an objective person looking at it, they're more likely to say, hey, this is loose and this is broken, and it's documented, and it tends to get fixed, as opposed to a building owner that does it themselves. They go, yeah, I'll get around to it, and it doesn't occur, and off you go. What's on your mind, sir?
Well, definitely it's the time of the year to – now is the time. Everybody's calling me, it's warm, hey, got cold, didn't it? You know, it's weird. It's you know, it's Florida. You know, one moment it's going to be, you know, in the 80s and
I enjoy
that. And then down to a lower temperature quickly. But yes, now is the time to apply pre-emergent if you're a homeowner and you're doing it yourself. This would be an ideal time. A lot of people were wanting to jump the gun, but you know, by jumping the gun and getting out ahead of everybody, you are going to reduce the useful time period that the pre-emergent is active. So a lot of times if people want to put it down in the beginning of February because it's warming up, well, pre-emergent has a life expectancy, so you'll have to put it down again. So you lose about, you know, 30 days of coverage and protection. So, you know, following the directions and following somewhat of a time
following the directions
is a good idea.
What a manly thing to
do. If you don't want chinch bugs in your yard, you know, pretty much during the season, you know, Arena is one of the best chinch bugs protection.
Chickens.
Chickens are good. But Arena or actually fire ants. Fire ants are, if you have fire ants, you're not going to have chinch bugs either because they're voracious predators. Or termites. You're not going to have termites. But or ticks. You know, I had a lady.
Fire ants, spiders, and wasps.
Ticks.
If you have
ticks.
Those three, fire ants, spiders,
exactly,
and wasps,
exactly.
Everything else is under control.
You know that I went to, getting a little bit off the subject, but I went to a place in Whitelock Farms, and the lady let the fire ants go, and she didn't have any ticks.
Yeah.
Because her father was an entomologist, and it really reduced
the population. Those three together,
yeah.
Fire ants, what did I say? Fire ants,
spiders and
wasps. They're like
predators.
Navy SEALs.
Right.
They're air,
eating
and land.
Other insects. And
one's
so,
down in the ground, one's mounted in a tree, the other's flying around.
Exactly. So
bam, it's like you're only
I know
squad.
Fire ants got a bad rap, and you know, if you
just
got little children, you know, I understand, but you don't want to get rid of them. But, you know, there is some advantages to keeping some fire ants. But, you know, getting the Arena out on your lawn, it's going to be very, very effective. That's one of the longest lasting chinch bugs.
I promise you, if ever I get a lawn, I will use
if you
Arena.
Put it, use Arena, you're not going to get chinch bugs.
Thank you. Right. It's 7:20 here at News 104.5. Very brief break, jumping right on the phones to your calls at 340-1045. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 7:25 here at News 104.5 WOKV. Beautiful morning. Grateful that you're here with us. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Gardens here. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. Would enjoy having you check in. Love to hear from you. 340-1045. Sasquatch.
Yeah.
I have been following your advice.
Yes.
Religiously as it relates to the care and feeding of my citrus.
Yes.
We had planned, you and I, on March 15th being the day I put out the black cow.
Yep.
And did my 10% grooming of the tree.
Right, right.
However, last week,
yeah,
the darn things, 8 out of 9 of them are in bloom.
Right, because of the warm trend, yeah.
So here's the decision I made. It kind of caught me by surprise. I have not yet put down the black cow, but I did take my little pruning shears, not the mm-hmm. big loppers, but the little ones,
yeah.
And I trimmed everything that was dead or anything that didn't have a, you know, blossom on it, sort of trimmed it back to get some,
sure.
What do you call that, like a raw end to it.
Right.
So I instead of a 10% trim back, it was well, maybe a 1% trim back.
Shaping it.
Yeah, and getting mm-hmm. the dead stuff out. I just right. just neaten them up a little
looks
bit.
Looks good.
Yeah.
Nice dark green.
Right. So spring sprung before we anticipated.
Right, absolutely did.
Any downside? Am I going to be okay?
No, you're not going to be. No, I mean, that's a really warm area you live in, you know, but you can hear the forecasted 30s
yep.
at night. So, you know, again, there's always a possibility of frost. So if you quick started your grass and we have down, it's, if it goes down into the freezing level, you're going to have, they'll burn your grass back and set it back about two months. But I'm talking about all those people who are doing that, jumping the gun, you know. But I think in your area, you're not going to have a issue at all.
Mandarin's
at all.
Good. I'm so close
Mandarin
to the water.
Mandarin is one of the warmest areas in town, Fleming Island.
Let me ask you another piece
yes.
of this. Judging by initial bloom count,
yeah,
this could be the most robust citrus year I've ever had.
When I
see crazy amounts of blooms, more than I've ever seen,
yeah.
What percentage of those, if we're swagging it, should I expect to set fruit?
10 to 20.
Is that all?
Yeah, the citrus are really known for having a profusion of blooms, but they only produce out of that 10 or 20% of it.
That would still be a record year for me.
It's unusual. It's a characteristic of it. I forgot what they call it. The botanical identification of that characteristic is, but it,
10 that's, to 20.
Yeah, they produce a lot more flowers than they do fruit. You know,
that's interesting because in the past I've been disappointed that I had far more blooms than fruit.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was just
normal. Especially citrus if it's under any kind of stress that will even go lower than that. You know, but
I got two.
Have to have ideal growing conditions to get a big fruit set, and that's good amount of water right now. So if the citrus are setting their fruit right now, this is the time to water and put some fertilizer on them. And you want to get the largest crop that you could get. Like if you have a big tree,
I don't have a real big tree.
Yeah, if you could bear the load, because you're going to have a huge amount of load on there. Yeah. You have some orange trees I've seen with 900 fruit, yeah. 600 fruit. But you want to make sure that you start with the water and the fertilizer right now, at least for a couple of weeks, to let the tree know, hey, there's plenty of resources to get going. You'll have a huge crop.
So get the black calendar now, don't wait.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'll start watering heavy.
Yeah, if you got that much fruit, flowers on there. Yeah.
I've got two Adirondack chairs out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been eating lunch, sitting out in my little citrus grove.
Oh, well.
Man, does it smell good.
Oh, it smells nice, doesn't it?
Really smells good.
You take any of the branches and off the tree with the flowers and put them in the house. You could.
The trees are small.
They can't spare a branch or two. Okay. But, people who have a lot of citrus trees, that's a great thing to do. Just take the branch and kind of hammer the end, open up the end and stick it in the water. It lasts about maybe a week, a week, and you have a nice fragrance and citrus fragrance in the house. It's not a bad idea. While they're blooming, yes.
Yeah, I'm not willing to do that. If I had a bigger what do you call it, citrus?
Yeah, when they get bigger.
Bigger grove with larger trees.
Larger trees. Larger trees. All right.
It's 7:30 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Fox News traffic, weather, then more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 340-1045. Stay with us. Right back. 7:36 here at News 104.5 WOKV on the Home and Garden Show. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here. If you have a burning desire to communicate with a large landscaper anytime during the week, he's easy to find all the time online, larrysgarden.com. Got the blog, got the video, frequently asked questions, and 2,000 active bloggers who are sharing the things that garden people share.
Right.
Whatever that might be. Larry's also got a telephone, should you need him during the week, 346-1970. That again, slower, 346-1970. Outside of the immediate Jacksonville area, add the area code 904-346-1970. Me, Wally Conway, easy to find all the time online, gohomepro.com. Home inspections, commercial building inspections, environmental sampling, any other due diligence you might need to assure that your home or commercial building has got the attention that it needs either prior to purchase, prior to sale, or just oddball troubleshooting. Take care of it. The phone number, 268-8211, outside of the immediate Jacksonville area, which, as a reminder, Larry and I often go well beyond Jacksonville.
Absolutely.
904-268-8211. What do you think about that?
All right, great.
Yeah, I stumbled into something. I didn't stumble into it. I was approached by the president of the company.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that makes buying a brand new home attractive to people is that
it's brand new.
It's brand new. And another thing is that it typically comes with a rather extensive structural warranty.
Sure.
Such that should the thing fall down or suffer other structural malady, the builder has a policy in place, not a personal policy, but rather a warranty policy, insurance-related policy that would take care of it.
You want the thing falling down, you drive home and say, honey, the house is falling down.
Right. And that's been the norm in new construction in Florida for 30-plus years, maybe close to 50 years. And there's never been anything like that available in a resale market. So you had a home, it lived there well for 10 years or 20 years or 50 years or 80 years or 150 years, whatever number of years. And now there's a buyer there and they say, hey, I love this home. However, there's no ability to have that same structural warranty. Well, that has changed.
Covering balconies too, right?
Balconies is a significant part of it, very significant part of it. So it's now available. We're partnering with Next Warranty, NXT, to be able to deliver that. And what's even more interesting is you can purchase it at any time, even if it's not related to the sale. So as an example, if you live in a neighborhood that no longer has the builder's warranty still attached to it, and you're thinking, man, I'd like to have that. That would give me peace of mind. That can be reissued to, not reissued by the same company, but Next Warranty can take care of that. It's new to the area. It's new to the country. It's going across the whole country. It's been less than 30 days since we've had the ability to issue those. But if that's something that's on your mind, if you'd sleep better at night with a structural warranty on your home, if you'd be able to get your home sold a little easier by being able to compete with new construction with that structural warranty, let me know that, and we will get that going for you. Oh, people always say, what does it cost? Well, the cost varies. You can imagine that. But for homes under 4,000 square feet, which is most housing stocks, the policies begin at $350.
That's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, it's cheap. So depending on, you know, what deductible you want, what total value of service you want, how many years you want it for, you know, it'll get between $350 and up toward about $1,500. So it just depends why you want it, how long you want it, what your concerns are, and they can comfortably craft that for you. Anyway, thought you'd be interested
in
that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I need a home.
Like if you were selling your house is what, 80 years old? 70?
Built in the 20s.
Okay, that would be 88 years.
Yeah, almost 100 years.
More than 80 years old, 90 years old.
Yeah.
And a person said, gosh, you know, I'm a little bit nervous. I'm uncomfortable with the idea that this 80-year-old home is structurally sound. That's reasonable. We can lay that next structural warranty on that, and that fear goes away because there's a partner in there.
Well, it stood up for 100 years, you know. I
mean, I'm not disagreeing with you.
It's probably going to stand for another 100, you know what I mean?
That would be the expectation.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it didn't, who would bear that expense? So if you sold the house to Scott, and in 3 years it suddenly
It's basically for things that, you know, that are fail in certain units of failure, you know, over a period of time. Like, you know, if some, give us an example where, you know, you've had experience with a failure and then use the warranty to repair it.
Well, since this has been across the country for less than 1 month, I cannot cite you an honest example of where it's come in and done it. I can't do it.
Yeah, yes.
It wouldn't be honest.
Right.
I can tell you the types of things that they cover are, and you mentioned it, balcony failures, immensely common. When you see them sagging and all that.
There are a lot of them sagging. When I go to the locations, there's a lot of sagging balconies.
So the purpose of the structural warranty is, you know, for those things that weren't covered by your termite bond, those things that weren't covered by your homeowner's insurance, those things that would have been covered by the builder's structural warranty, had it not lapsed, it's intended to take that particular place. So that's the what.
Okay.
Now, this time, certainly by fall, and looking at, not only from our company, but looking across the country, we'll have great examples of where they swooped in and saved it. I'll tell you how it came about, though, since to give you a similar idea. If you recall, what was it, in 06, 07, and 08, when the housing boom just tanked. It just went.
Right.
And there were many, many, many subdivisions in our area and all across the country where the entire subdivision was abandoned by the developer. Abandoned meaning they gave it back to the bank and they're sitting there. And they'd sit there empty and abandoned, you know, in partial states of completion. Some had a slab, some were framed. They were in all these different things, especially townhome communities. And this is how this warranty policy came to exist. So a guy came in, a developer, a second developer, and bought the entire subdivision. It happened to be townhomes in this example. It was in Indiana. Bought the entire subdivision incomplete and said, and he bought it cheap. You know, he bought it for like 10 cents on the dollar from the bank who just wanted to get rid of it. So he buys it and he's like, yeah, great, I can finish this. He goes to his bank to get the money to finish it.
And the bank says, great, we'll give you the money to finish it. And under the condition, you put a structural warranty in place, just like every other new build. Well, none of the companies in the country at that time would write it. They just said, we're not warranting something that you didn't build from the beginning through. So they went to RWS, Residential Warranty Services, who we partner with.
And they came up with an idea.
Yeah, and they said, whoa, this is an interesting challenge. How could we do this? And they put together the policies and protocols to execute it. That subdivision, which I think was about 400 townhome units, they were able to get the funding, get it completed. Everybody moved in, structural warranty in place. And from that experience, the president of the company, Nathan Thornberry, did you ever meet him with me? He's checked in on the radio once in a while. From that, he got his team working on it and said, how can we take this experience, this singular event, across the country and make it available, you know, to every home buyer, every home seller, every agent, and even to a person not selling their home who just wants that protection.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it came about. Pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
So here we are on the ground floor.
It was kind of a beginning thing, and then he said, well, why don't we offer this to everybody?
Well, someone once said, I don't recall who, necessity is the mother of invention.
Yes.
So
yes.
there was a deep and intense problem. It had to get solved. And when they solved that singular problem, it was inordinately expensive.
I bet.
Because it had never been done before.
Right.
So what they learned through the development of that process is what enabled them to get it down to as little as $350 on a home as large as 4,000 square feet. Actually, $399.99.
$399.
Call it 4,000 feet.
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you think of that?
Oh, amazing. Amazing thing. New products are always developed because of mother. What is it? Mother.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
Yes, I remember that.
Okay, got to have a problem before you can sell a solution.
Yes. Well, hey, there's the perennials. If people are perennial gardeners, which is a great idea, and those are the flowers that come back every single year. And there's many types that, you know, it's probably in our area, it's probably the most underused concept, you know, having perennials. You know, they're mostly, it's all done with annuals here. But perennials, you know, are very, very reliable. And you're picking the right types, they'll come back every single year and produce color for you.
But why do you think they're not as popular?
I think it's because of several different things. You know, number one, the growers are not familiar with which ones are a viable plant in our zone. May it start out as a perennial because of, and it may come from up north, or they may red something and they plant it here, and by August it's either rotted out or it's gotten so diseased it's not worth looking at. But there's a lot of good ones. There's not as many available if you live, let's say, in North and South Carolina, where there is some, you know, climate moderation, and it's a longer period of cold hours. You know, chill hours in the there's some longer dormancies. But here, you know, we have Stokesia aster, we have Coreopsis. There's a lot of good perennials, and people have put out there some cone flowers. They need a little bit of fertilizer in the spring, so you want to have at least a couple applications of liquid fertilizer just for a quick startup, and then a little bit of Osmocote, you know, or any slow release to keep them going, you know, the flowering and looking good all summer long. There's a lot of salvias that are very heat resistant and tough, but the you know, when a plant is like roses and they got to perform for 9 to 10 months, you know, they're going to need some fertilizer. You know, green stuff is a little less demanding, but you know, flowering plants. So break out your fertilizer on your plumbagos, which is a flowering shrub, actually, and all your perennials, and you'll be in your daylilies and all those things.
I promise
you'll fare much better.
Let's see if we can help Dan in Mandarin with his roof insurance question. Dan, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Morning, fellas. Wally, when you went through the re-roofing of your house, you talked about how you documented a lot of different things and were able to get a significant discount.
The wind mitigation form, yes.
It's called a wind mitigation form, is that it?
Correct. It's a state form filled out by a home inspector that gives your insurer a mandate to assure that you're getting the lowest rate available.
Okay, so then no matter what insurance company a homeowner would go to, they are obligated within a certain degree to accept that form if everything is completed and everything. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Would you know offhand, and you may not know this, I live in a homeowners association. We have 103 townhomes, 28 individual buildings, 3 to 4 units per building. And we're going to have to re-roof by 2021 or 2022. And I was directly involved as a board member on the last re-roofing.
Lucky you.
Yeah, what a joke that was. But anyway, I want to go ahead. I'm getting some feedback here. I want to go ahead and start getting the process going now. So would you know offhand if this would also apply to people that live in townhomes? Would they?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, it does. And right. One of the frustrations in the townhome communities is if you have 100 units, there's two separate policies. One, you've got the policy that relates to the association, and then you've got the individual homeowner's policy of each unit. So mm-hmm. it's a blended effort. And what's most important is that when you're choosing the roof, that you specify those things that will give you the highest discount as an association and the highest discount as an individual. So it's a blended approach, and it's brilliant that you're working on it now.
Yeah, well, it turns out the insurance companies got smart, and no one insurance company will write insurance on the roofs for the homeowners association anymore. So we ended up changing the covenant several years ago. So every homeowner is required to provide proof of insurance on their unit for storm damage.
Very candidly, that's the type of thing, and you're 3 years out on it, so we've got plenty of time. But if it's blended together correctly, we could bulk process something like that and save a tremendous amount of time and money rather than having X number of individual homeowners coordinated and spending money. So happy to help you with it, Dan. Wish you well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. It's 7:51 here at News 104.5. Brief break. Jumping back on the phones to your calls at 340-1045. Stay with us. Be right back. 7:55 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Grateful that you've been with us. Over to the south side, checking in with Ralph, helping with his crepe myrtles. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show, Ralph.
Good morning.
Morning.
My crepe myrtle is about 40 foot high.
Wow.
It's probably about 50 years old. But this year I've got these big things, looks like big scrubbing balls hanging on it.
Yes. Oh, well, those aren't anything harmful to the tree. They're kind of like
an air plant.
You know, they're a member of the orchid family. And, when the canopy gets a little weaker, you have more light penetration, there'll be more of them. But so what I would do is put a little more fertilizer on the tree, and then you could spray them, you know, with some copper, and that usually kills them. And, getting the canopy thicker, and then they'll go away. Okay, get a dense canopy. All right?
What's a good fertilizer?
On crepe myrtles, I would use, right now, I'd use a combination of Miracle-Gro rose fertilizer and a little bit of fish emulsion. And after about 3 applications of that, I would put just some slow release like Osmocote on there, a good amount of it, and you should be in good shape for the rest of the season. And you'll get a lot of flowers. A lot of flowers if you do that. The crepe myrtle will be leaning over with flowers if you do that.
It just looks, you know, because it's lost its leaves, but, you know, for the winter. But
yeah.
I just see, like, big old scrubbing pads.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, they're not hurting the tree. They're just kind of clinging to the tree. They're not getting into the bark or anything like that. They're just an air plant that lives, you know, on the debris, you know, and so that they're not a problem.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Good luck with it. I am anti-crepe murdering.
Oh, yeah.
It's my official position.
There's been a lot of crepe murdering going on. I mean, there's stacks of it about by the road, you know. It doesn't produce any more flowers. It actually does weaken the tree. And if you're, want to plant crepe myrtles this season, just, you know, review the type you want to plant. So when it gets mature, it stays, you know, about that size. You know, it doesn't, you know, get into the 40-foot level. Some great ones I love, you know, because would be Catawba, which is a really rich, kind of a lavender purple color. Rich foliage when it breaks out in the spring. It's, you know, dark green and kind of a, you know, a little bit of red overcast. Pink velour is another great, you know, rich, rich pink color. Gets around 15 feet, 20 feet. A very slow grower. Dynamite, if you love that blood red color. Again, beautiful foliage, you know, and good fall color.
I like good foliage and I cannot lie. 7:58 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Grateful that you were with us. We'll be back next week. Looking forward to it. In the interim, use your turn signal.